evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, July 22nd, 2021. A South Sudanese company sues the office of the country's first vice president for unpaid bills.
My lawyer called them for the meeting. We said for the compromise. They said that let's make compromise on this issue. We give our position, and they, after giving our position, they said that, okay, they will call us for the next meeting.
And Sudan's transitional government welcomes debt relief by the country's foreign allies.
We started genuine economic and legislative reforms in the country, which convinced the international community that the transitional government is serious towards carrying out economic and legislative reforms in the country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese company has sued the office of the country's first vice president, Riek Machar, over unpaid car rental bills amounting to $330,000. The managing director of the Bright Horizon Trading Company says he and the company's lawyer filed a case against Machar's office. For VOA News, Viola Elias has this report from Juba.
Anis Godfrey, a managing director at the Bright Horizon Trading, says in 2016, Yagdak, the head of the National Committee for Finance and Resource Mobilization in the SPLM-SPLA-IO, rented a Toyota Land Cruiser V6 from his company for 2 months but never paid the bill. Godfrey says, according to the signed agreement, the money for the rental was supposed to be paid in full within 2 months after the establishment of the transitional government of national unity. Godfrey says Dark later signed another agreement with the company to purchase the car, but following the renewed fighting between government forces and Machar's bodyguard in July 2016, Machar's office failed to pay for the car. Godfrey says ever since Machar was reappointed first vice president, officials in his office have been dodging attempts by the company to obtain the money for the car. Documents seen by South Sudan in Focus indicate that Bright Horizon Trading wrote to First Vice President Machar through the Office of Defense and Veteran Affairs, requesting payment for the vehicle purchased back in 2016 for 1,800,000 South Sudanese pounds. He says during a recent meeting between the two parties, officials in the first vice president office assured his team they would pay the money, but later reneged, forcing his company to take legal action.
My lawyer called them for the meeting. We said for the compromise. They said that let's make compromise on this issue. We give our position, and they, after giving our position, they say that, okay, they will call us for the next meeting. When they call us for the next meeting, when we end there, what they say that they will give us, $85,000 instead of $330,000. And what he's telling me that they don't have the money. If they get the money, they will call us. And they did not give us a specific period when they will give us the money. So we did not agree with them. So we decide to continue with this case to the court.
Ernesto Mali, the owner of Bright Horizon Trading, is calling on Machar's office to pay the money it owes his company. Mali says he believes this is a small matter and Machar office will work with his company to resolve the amount due amicably.
When Dr. Machar returned to Juba nearly 2 years ago, his office promised to pay us, but later they have been dodging not to pay the compensation of our Toyota Land Cruiser V6, which was hired by his office before the crisis of 2016. As a father and a leader of my family, I don't think it is a big issue to the office of Dr. Riek Machar as the second highest office in the country to get an urgent solution for this issue.
Pothboth Balang, the acting press secretary in the first vice president office, confirms Bright Horizon Trading has requested payment from Machar's office for the rent and eventually purchased of the vehicle. Balang also confirms that in 2016, Machar's office signed a car hires agreement with the company, as he stated in documents. He says his office is committed to resolving the matter.
This matter will be resolved. Unfortunately, General Abuja, Martin Abuja, the Executive Director of the Office of First Vice President, is not in the country at the moment. He went for the San Adigo talks with the Hollard groups in Rome. And we are working on how to resolve this matter once he's back. I would like to assure the public and assure the company that our commitment want to resolve this matter once and for all.
Bright Horizon Trading Company Limited deals in distribution, agriculture industry, and the import and export of goods in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan has moved away from her predecessor's pandemic denial to urge social distancing, hand washing, and mask wearing. But as the third wave of the coronavirus sweeps across Africa, it seems the measures are being ignored by most of the public. For VOA News, Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Ramadan Juma is calling passengers into a bus, popularly known by locals as Dala Dala, riding in the busy city of Dar es Salaam. Neither the driver nor his passengers are wearing masks to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Juma says lack of clear instructions from Tanzanian authorities have led many to become less serious about the pandemic.
There's no emphasis. I cannot wear a mask because when I look at the people in the surrounding, there's no one who is wearing masks, no sanitizers, and also there are no water tanks here. In short, there's no shock from my fellows. So I cannot be shocked as my fellows. I take it the same.
A week ago, for just the second time in a year, Tanzanian authorities gave statistics for the number of COVID-19 patients in the country. They said from January through July 8th of this year, there were just over 400 COVID cases. Rates groups say numbers over the last year are likely much higher. The government says it is currently working on importing vaccines and calling for people to take preventive steps.
The government continues to ask every citizen to take precautions against COVID-19 by following the guidelines from our health experts, since prevention is better than cure.
It's a sharp turn from the position of the late President John Magufuli, who denied the presence of the virus in Tanzania and discouraged the use of face masks. Rights activists accused the government of failing to provide good information and leadership in the face of the pandemic.
The government has created a big division in the society due to the fact that society has people with different understandings.
Tanzania's health minister says the country must unite against the virus.
This outbreak of disease is like a war because it claims the lives of many and weakens the economy of the country. We must join forces, and I'm expecting to see you, with your cameras, go into public buses telling people about this information, and then you say you have participated in the war.
Meanwhile, Ramadan Juma continues with his work, despite being at high risk of contracting COVID-19. Juma says serious emphasis on prevention will make people, especially his passengers, to take precautions, something that will also make him do the same. Charles Kombe for VOA News in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
Still on COVID, the U.S. Coordinator for Global COVID-19 Response says the first donation of 25 million vaccines to Africa will help fight the Delta variant, causing much of recent deaths on the continent. Speaking at a briefing Wednesday, Gayle E. Smith said President Joe Biden's promised 500 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine will start to arrive in Africa next month. Mohammed Yusuf spoke to the deputy director of the Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention on the significance of the donation in this report from Nairobi.
In the coming weeks, Burkina Faso, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Gambia, and Senegal will share some 25 million Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson vaccines. to curb the spread of the pandemic across the continent. Gail Smith, the U.S. State Department Coordinator for Global COVID-19 Response, says her government is ready to do more to make sure Africa gets enough vaccines to give to its people.
We are continuing to share doses. We are pressing other countries to do more, whether through financial contributions to COVAX. We're sharing their own doses to bring those online as quickly as possible. And we have Pfizer and AU doses coming on in August. So we are expecting, but we're all going to have to work at this, an increasingly regular supply. But it's going to take a lot of time and energy to do that.
COVAX is a global initiative with the goal to distribute vaccines to low and middle income countries. Smith says 500 million Pfizer doses promised by President Joe Biden's administration and Africa will get 60 million in August. Africa has vaccinated 1.3% of the 1.3 billion people living on the continent. Akuna Cook is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. Cook says the current donation of vaccine is part of the U.S. government's initiative to support Africa's health sector.
Our response is but the latest in a long record of U.S. cooperation with African partners in enhancing Africa's health security, whether through PEPFAR, the President's Malaria Initiative, the Global Health Security Agenda on Ebola, maternal and child health, and so many other areas. All of this is part of our commitment to Africa's health infrastructure, an infrastructure that is helping us meet the demands of this COVID response.
On July 1st, the American government, with the help of German and French development banks, gave $712 million to Aspen Pharmacare, a South Africa-based company, to produce 400 million Johnson & Johnson vaccines for Africa. The three countries also support another pharmaceutical company in Senegal to produce vaccines for Africa. Strive Masiyiwa is the African Union Special Envoy on COVID-19 and coordinator of the African Vaccine Acquisition Trust. Speaking at an online news briefing, he said production of vaccines in Africa can help the continent vaccinate its population easily.
We want to make clear to all suppliers, as I have told them, that if you want a long-term future with us now, you produce from Africa. We don't mind. You can, if you want land, we'll give you. If you want to own everything 100%, we don't mind. Just produce from the African continent. Because when we got into trouble this time, it was because there was no production from the African continent.
The African Vaccine Acquisition Trust, an AU effort supporting vaccination efforts on the continent, said Aspen will supply 10 million vaccines in August and end production of 400 million doses by September 2022. The continent's public health agency said last week Africa recorded 283,000 new infections and at least 6,000 deaths. A 12% increase from previous week. COVID-19 is a disease caused by the coronavirus. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, the transitional government in Sudan praises foreign allies. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what kinds of infrastructure improvements are the biggest priority in your community?
I would like my roads to be improved because we are not comfortable with the roads.
I think it is hospital. It's hospital because I'm seeing people suffering with their kids, even mothers, they are suffering when they are pregnant.
Park where children can play and where adults can also meet to hang out will be a big improvement.
For the government to do the street so that when people are driving, their cars cannot be bumping and all over, and the gutters as well. The gutters are full of rubbish and then it's choke as well. If they can clear the dirty things out, it will be perfect.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Still on COVID, Zimbabwe has ordered all government workers to get vaccinated against the coronavirus or lose a payout. But one of the largest government worker groups is resisting compulsory vaccination, while another is calling for compliance with the directives. For VOA News, Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
After a cabinet meeting late Tuesday, Monica Mchangwa, Zimbabwe's information minister, told reporters that the government was concerned about a continued increase in COVID-19 cases in the country.
In light of the continued rise in COVID-19 cases, cabinet approved the following: the decongesting of both public and private sector workplaces. In taking the lead, government has further reduced its workforce to 25%. Priority will be given to the vaccinated personnel. 2, that the court of law be opened only for remand and urgent cases. Then 3, that all civil servants should be vaccinated, and those that fall ill without having been vaccinated will not be entitled to the COVID-19 insurance.
Robson Shereni, head of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, says the directive must be defied.
We are saying the vaccination program should be voluntary. No worker should be forced to be vaccinated. The government must put more efforts actually on availing information on the importance of people getting vaccinated. That is the priority that the government must focus on, rather than forcing the workers to get vaccinated.
Sifiso Ndlovu, who heads the Zimbabwe Teachers Association, says the government's drive to inoculate all its workers is a noble one.
The nation is faced by an emergency situation which can turn out to be catastrophic if exigent measures are not taken to protect the masses from exposure to infection. This decision, therefore, to encourage civil servants and to motivate them is taken on a balance of scale to protect the lives in our nation. And we want to encourage all our compatriots to take up vaccination as one of the measures to control this contagion.
About 1,247,000 Zimbabweans out of a population of 14 million have received their first shot, and nearly 650,000 have received their second inoculation since the program started in February. Sharon says the union will file a lawsuit if vaccines become mandatory.
If the government of Zimbabwe insists with the commander approach on implementing the vaccination program towards the workers of government of Zimbabwe, we will definitely stop the process by going to the courts actually to seek justice in this process.
Zimbabwe has 88,415 confirmed coronavirus infections and 2,747 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins University, which tracks the global outbreak. The government says with an intensified vaccination program, the numbers will not keep going up. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
The Sudanese transitional government has welcomed a decision to cancel more than $14 billion of debt owed by Sudan over the past several years. Sudanese officials say the decision was taken after the government implemented economic and legislative reforms. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Addressing a news conference in Khartoum earlier this week, Sudanese Finance Minister Jibril Ibrahim hailed the Paris Club countries for forgiving Sudan $14.1 billion out of $23 billion in debt. In audio supplied by the government-run Sudan News Agency, Ibrahim said the decision to forgive the debt followed swift reforms the transitional government carried out over the past few months.
We started genuine economic and legislative reforms in the country, which convinced the international community that the transitional government is serious towards carrying out economic and legislative reforms in the country, and therefore we deserve this achievement.
The Paris Club is an informal group of creditor nations whose objective is to find workable solutions to payment problems faced by debtor nation. The countries are Australia, Austria, Belgium, Brazil, Canada, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Ireland, India, Israel, Italy, Japan, Netherlands, Norway, Russia, South Korea, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, the United Kingdom, and the United States. Paris Club officials say Sudan became eligible for debt relief after the International Monetary Fund accepted it last month into highly indebted poor countries or HIPIC initiative based on a commitment to macroeconomic reforms. Minister Ibrahim says Sudan will now be eligible to apply for loans with many international financial institutions without any obstacles as compared to previous decades. Ibrahim says the decision to forgive Sudan's debt will also open more doors for international investors to invest in the country without fear.
Our credit status is going to improve. This will enable international investors and partners to engage with us in providing more loans. We expect that the international financial institutions will now be in a position to fund Sudan in the coming period.
Sudan has been implementing aggressive IMF monetary reforms in the hopes of turning around its economy and attracting international investment and debt relief. In late February, the government devalued and floated the local currency in a bid to address economic imbalances and curb foreign exchange trade in the black market. In June, Sudan lifted all subsidies on gasoline and diesel and declared that fuel prices would be determined by the cost of importing fuel and transporting gas and diesel, as well as the taxes' profit margins. The International Monetary Fund announced last month that Sudan reached what is called the decision point in the HIPIC program to relieve debt on heavily indebted poor countries, and is now eligible for debt relief totaling $50 billion. Ibrahim says the money saved from the debt relief will be used to improve local production and provide basic services to Sudanese citizens.
We will be in a position to save the cash that we are supposed to pay as debt to be used in development. And that way, our local currency will be stronger. This can also be transferred to supply the basic services such as education, health, and infrastructures, among many others.
Ibrahim called on citizens to be patient with the transitional government as it works to build new Sudan.
Any economic reforms require enough time because we are intended to address it drastically and transfer the resources to the productive and services sectors accordingly. That is why we need our people to bear with us and have more patience.
Sudan owes another $20.3 billion to non-Paris Club countries, including Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and China. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Sudan, we move to Uganda, where it is not uncommon to see people carry paper bags to schools, offices, and to and from retail and grocery stores. But perhaps you will argue that it's a new trend because they can be recycled. In Uganda, Ori Bags Innovation Limited, one of the leading manufacturers of eco-friendly paper bags, is turning various forms of waste into valuable products. For more, Africa 54's technology correspondent Paul Ndiho via Skype spoke with Rushia Orikiza, CEO Ori Bags Innovations Limited in Kampala, Uganda.
Came up with this incredible idea back in the day, and now you are one of the leading producers of paper bags in Uganda. Tell me a little bit more about your innovations.
At Ori Bags, we do ecologically recover agricultural wastes, office waste, to make packaging materials in different sizes, colors, and shapes. And we mainly specialize in two lines. one in gift bags and the second one in gift boxes.
You talked about agriculture and office recyclables. So what's that? What are you talking about?
We work with the different sperm suppliers where we use cotton waste. Mainly, it is the reading waste that we use. Yes, we also, when we're still under incubation at the Uganda Industrial Research, we experimented different wastes and fibers. But because of the cost implication, we only concentrated on cotton waste. So that's what we mainly use. We turn it around. We make different grammages of paper, which we convert into gift bags. And the office waste, we use it for making straw board, which is the line for making gift boxes.
How did you get started? Where did you get this idea of converting a raw cotton or a recyclable cotton into beautiful paper bags?
As a student, I was at the university and I used to make jewelry products for my fellow students, lecturers, and the people whom I used to approach to sell my beaded products. So later, it became a business for everyone. I was no longer profiting from it. So having been a reader at the university, I approached the Uganda Industrial Research Institute with my idea to be supported to develop a good, competent product. So through different interactions and the first buyers that we supplied, we put in consideration their feedback. So that's where we were in position to only concentrate on the cost-effective fibers that could be used to make different packaging materials.
When I first met you a couple years ago, you are like really struggling. Now you tell me you've moved on. You own a facility. Congratulations on that. What are you able to do at that facility now?
Definitely, it has been an exciting and challenging journey for me and my team at Oribags. So now we have our own home, yes, which is on Mitiana Road, a few kilometers from the main city center, where we have mainly all the department's production facility. We have their product development facility and all the core departments that matter in our business.
That's all we prepared for you today. Let us know what is happening in your area. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We'll air your comments every Friday. We now leave you with the song Saida by JJD Muzika.
Evangelio Anna Maria Saida Malu Jede.
We have been listening to JJD Muzika with the song Saida. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Fikiri Iyal, Fikiri Muhammad, and Nafi Bidaya.